And Jet, thank you for giving all of this advice. Like, it's amazing. And I just feel like regenerated, even though it's been crazy. I'm just like, oh, yes.
You're listening to the Happy Career Formula with Jet Stubbs, where we talk about how to find what you love to do and turn it into ways to make money, whether that's a job, freelance service, or a business, so you can live life on your own terms. We're going to start off today about how to land a job you love and go from an entry-level role to that six-figure job. We're going to talk about how do you find the next dream job or business idea so you can start to make money, how to start a business or find a job during a pandemic, how to start to overcome fears of I don't know enough or who am I to do this, and why not knowing enough can be a huge advantage right now. We're also going to be talking about a framework for marketing yourself so that you can feel confident going out there and selling yourself to strangers, employers, or potential clients. And this framework will work whether you're writing a resume or writing a sales pitch or marketing yourself face-to-face in front of somebody or virtually in front of somebody. I'll teach you these frameworks step by step. At the end, you're going to be listening to a live coaching session with two people that recently were laid off due to the pandemic. When I graduated from university as an international student during a recession, I had 90 days to find a job or leave the country. With zero connections and no family in the country, I realized I had a ton of skills, but no idea how to market myself. I had to learn quickly and I had a ton of self-doubt. I ended up going from 0% response rate to 100 applications to a 70% response rate to 10 applications. So for every 10 applications I sent out, I was getting 7 interviews. So since then, I've worked with new grads, graduate school applicants, seasoned professionals, C-suite executives, and six-figure earners. I've worked with career development and entrepreneurship across 40-plus industries from aerospace engineering, business, healthcare, music, visual arts, zoology, and so much more. Today, I want to walk you through the process that I use because I've helped people land opportunities during COVID, get their dream jobs during a pandemic by using these same principles. These principles translate whether you're looking for a job or you're trying to market yourself to a client. I'm going to walk you through how you find work you love to do first. And it's going to be a totally different way of thinking about work than you've been taught if you went to like a career center or some other kind of coaching. It's really the foundations about how business and making money works. So let's dive right into it. Imagine a Venn diagram in your head. There are three circles overlapping. And we're going to start with the top left circle. It's what I call desire. So you need to start off with thinking about what you want out of life. And whenever I tell people this, they think it sounds so woo-woo. So you need to think about every job, freelance service, or business that you want to have that will make you happy, will help you fund your life goals. So that means that success for you looks different than success for me. And what I want in my life now is different from what I want in my life 5 years ago and what I want 5 years from now. Your career is going to fund your life goals. What do your life goals look like? And you need to go through the different areas. So think about what you want in your finances, health, emotional well-being, spiritual well-being, if that's important to you, physical well-being, relationships, so romantic relationships, family relationships. When I graduated from university, I was living off of $500 a month from a part-time job, and I had $50 at the end of paying rent. I was lucky enough to have a friend's family who took me in and gave me room and board for $450 per month. So I had $50 left for the rest of the month. I had to walk to work because I couldn't afford a bus pass. And it was like a 45-minute walk each way for a 2-hour shift. So I was walking as long as I was working. And I had to figure out, like, I was really scared. I was terrified of being stuck in a job that I hated when I found new work. I was terrified of being stuck paying off debt. I was terrified of being stuck in a cold country and never being able to afford to visit or see my family. So I made a list of what I wanted my life to look like in these different areas. And what I want you to think about when you're creating this list for your life is, first of all, these are future points of negotiation. So I just helped somebody negotiate a salary increase of about $15,000. And when he negotiated that salary increase, one of the things that he negotiated was the ability to work remotely for at least 2 months out of the year, even post-pandemic and post-COVID, so that he could visit his family. And these were things that were important for him. So that's not affecting his vacation time. He can now see his family who live in another country for 2 months out of the year, and it doesn't affect his vacation time. So he could also go and travel with his girlfriend. So you want to think these points for your life, if you're looking at multiple job opportunities in the future, or if you're looking at multiple opportunities, these are points for negotiation in the future. So it is important that you take the time to write this down. I want you to think about process-oriented goals, because the truth is most people will say, I want to have a house in 5 years, or I want to achieve X in 3 years. When you set your life up for that sort of results-oriented goal, you can set it up so that you hate your day-to-day life. You can hate every day of your life up until those 5 years where you get that house. And then once you get the house, you'll set another goal and you'll make your life impossible and miserable until you achieve that other goal. You won't get to a point where you're achieving balance. So you need to actually enjoy the journey. So what would you need when you're thinking about these goals? What would you need to be able to enjoy a day in your life, a week in your life, a month or a year in your life? And this is how I want you to think about achieving your goals. So the next question, and the bigger question, is, well, how do you find what you love to do, or how do you make money to achieve these goals? So that brings us to the top right of the Venn diagram. So the top right circle, I call it demand, and that means market demand. So we talked about your desires. Market demand is about other people's desires. Every job, freelance service, or business is based off of solving a problem. So people pay to have problems solved. I want you to think about anything that you're touching right now. If you're in your car driving, the car that you're driving, the clothes that you're wearing. If you're at home, the bed you're laying in, the couch you're on, the earrings you're wearing, the table you're touching, the headphones you're wearing. Everything that you've bought, even the house you may be in, you bought it because it solves a problem. You bought it because it helps. You bought it because it creates some sort of benefit in your life. Your Netflix subscription, you bought it because it gives you entertainment. Everything that you've bought, everything that you touch, it helped somebody else make money because they helped you achieve something that you wanted in your life, or have something that you wanted in your life. So every job, freelance service, or business is based on solving a problem or helping somebody achieve a goal. You're either taking somebody away from something negative, so you're solving a problem for them, or you're taking them towards something positive. So you're sharing a hobby, or you're sharing a passion, or you're sharing something that you love to do. You need to be able to identify what types of problems you solve for people. You need to be able to talk about those problems in that person's words. So think about a minimum wage job. We're trying to get you to transition from that entry level job to that six-figure opportunity, or to creating your own business. So think about a minimum wage job, like a cashier or a Starbucks barista or something like that. All of those jobs, they have lots of manuals, instructions, supervision. They all tell you what to do and where you need to be. They may even tell you exactly what you need to say. And that's because when people are going out and applying for those jobs, what they're doing is using a very task-based resume. They're talking about what they've done in the past. And this applies for entrepreneurship too. So when you're going out, are you just telling people what you've done in the past, or are you telling people the problems you solve for them? So if you're going to a company and you're saying, this is what I've done in the past, these are the history of the tasks and responsibilities, tell me what to do and how I can help you. That's what a resume or a task-based approach is saying. Remember, every job, freelance service, or business is based on solving a problem. So the company's response to you is, I don't know what problems you can solve. I don't know how you can help me. So I'm either not going to hire you, or I will give you an entry-level job. and I will give you tasks that you can do repeatedly, and I will pay you for the hours that you spend doing those tasks, because I'm not sure how you can help. Maybe if you help more, or if I see something, then maybe I will promote you. So that's what happens when you're looking for those entry-level roles. You're focusing on a very task-based approach, and you're not understanding the big picture. So I want you to think now of like a VP of finance or a CEO. A VP of finance, for example, is saying, my functional area of expertise is finance. Any problems related to finance, you can come to me and I will either know how to solve them or figure out how to solve them. So that means the CEO of the company can go to the VP of finance. The VP of HR, their colleagues can go to the VP of finance. The employees of the company can go to the VP of finance, and the clients of the company can go to the VP of finance with finance questions. And the VP of finance, when they're going out and looking for work, their resume is a history of their credibility and authority. So their resume is a history of solving similar problems for companies related to finance. It's a history of solving financial problems and helping companies achieve their financial goals by developing strategy. So it's a history of solving problems. It's not a history of tasks. There's a formula that you can use to market yourself. And honestly, this formula, it's the foundation of one of the formulas that I teach when I am teaching like entrepreneurs how to market and create a sales pitch. It's called CAR. The C is challenge. A is for action. R is for result. The C, the challenge, which is the problem. So for example, I can say that I'm helping you. You're struggling right now with transitioning to a six-figure role or increasing your income. That's the problem. The action that I'm taking is I'm teaching you three-part like Venn diagram formula for finding work that you love to do and a formula for marketing yourself. And the result will hopefully be you'll walk away and have tools to start to attract better opportunities and make more income. That's an example of a CAR statement. And for to make it a statement, I would include a time frame. So in the next 90 minutes, I'm helping you. So you can use the CAR formula in three different scenarios. You can use it in interviews to answer, tell me about yourself. You can start by saying, I help these types of people solve these types of problems, or I help these types of companies solve these kinds of problems. These are the actions, the skills, qualifications, degrees, experience that I bring to the table. And these are the results that I've delivered in the past. That's a great formula for tell me about yourself. It's also a formula for answering interview questions. So tell me about a time when you struggled with working with a difficult colleague. You talk about the problem, you give the actions that you took, you talk about the result and maybe what you learned from it. So this formula, it changes the way that you're selling yourself because it shifts you from that task-based approach that we talked about for that cashier role to a problem-solving approach. I've worked with cashiers and I've worked with people who have that experience who are trying to incorporate that into their resume and they're stuck because they don't know how. I always say, ask yourself three questions, because the truth is, if you think about the last time you went to the grocery store, who was the only staff member you spoke to or talked to? A lot of times you can go to a grocery store and the only person that you speak to is the cashier. You may speak to one of the stocking people, but the truth is the cashier acts as the face of the company for most grocery stores. They are the representative that interacts with clients. So as a cashier, your job isn't just processing cash. Even just the act of processing cash, what you're really doing is processing the revenue for the company. You and your teammate of cashiers are processing the revenue that is going into that organization. So if that grocery store makes $500,000 a year, you and your team are processing $500,000 a year, and you individually could be responsible for processing thousands or tens of thousands of dollars each week or each month. So that's one thing to think about. That's really the big picture. The other thing is you're helping to reduce theft. You're monitoring and making sure that people aren't sneaking away with goods under their clothing and they're paying for their grocery bags. You're also monitoring inventory levels. Every time you're scanning a barcode, it helps the company know how much inventory inventory they should be buying, what they should be stocking up on, when they should be buying. All of these things are integral parts of that business that you're not thinking about. Typically, when I'm speaking to a cashier, they just say, oh, I process cash. You didn't just process cash. You had multiple benefits to the organization. So I want you to think, if you are hiring a cashier, do you want to hire the cashier that understands the problems that they're solving for the organization? Or do you want to hire the cashier that just says, give me tasks and I will do them, or I'm just processing cash? You want the person who thinks in that problem-solving mindset, who realizes the goals the organization is trying to achieve and helps them achieve those goals. When I was in university and I graduated and I had my 90 days to find a job or leave the country, one of the things that I did was during my undergrad, I had done an internship in an offshore bank, and I had just scanned documents for 6 weeks. It was so boring. I cannot emphasize enough how boring this job was. And it was so hard for me to talk about it using a CAR formula, because I was just like, how do I talk about scanning documents? And literally the first draft of my resume said scanning documents. And then I asked myself three questions. Why did they choose to pay me for this? So why did the company choose to pay you? I said, okay, well, I wasn't just scanning documents. I was updating from a paper-based system to a paperless system. And I said, okay, well, updating the system is still a task. It's still an action. It's not a result. So what is the result? So I said, what is the benefit of me updating the paperless system? The answer I found was, it was know your client files that I was updating. So I was updating the bank's like information on their clients and making sure that the client information was up to date. So that's a benefit, but that's still not that powerful. So I asked myself a third question. What's the risk if this doesn't get done? That's when I really had an aha moment. So when I asked myself, what's the risk? My answer was, well, if the Know Your Client files aren't updated, then the banks won't be in compliance with anti-money laundering laws, and they can be blacklisted. So that means the banks will be under suspicion for not keeping accurate client information, so they don't know where clients should be paying taxes, and that could be contributing to illegal enterprises funneling funds through this bank. And so international businesses and countries won't want the bank to do business with the bank. My statement changed from scanning documents to updating Know Your Client files to prevent an offshore bank from being blacklisted and maintain compliance with international anti-money laundering standards. So that is a totally different statement. Honestly, I scanned documents. I scanned documents and I just checked that the right information was in the files, but I had to think about the big picture. I was so focused on how dull the task was that I wasn't focused on the big picture. So when you're creating your challenge, action, result, or your CAR stories, I want you to ask yourself those three questions. Why did the company choose to pay you? What's the benefit to them? What's the problem that you're solving? What's the risk if it doesn't get done? So that will help you write and tell really robust stories. These same principles apply when you're talking about solving problems for your clients. Let's say you want to switch over to being an entrepreneur. These same principles apply. You want to identify the problem that your client is experiencing. You want to give them a simple 3 or 4 step formula that they can use and outline that for them. And then you want to talk about the results that they can achieve. Then you want to build up your credibility to achieve those results by using testimonials and social proof. So this formula is true for marketing yourself. Let's start again. So we talked about desire. If you want to build a career or business that funds your life goal, you need to know what your life goals are first. So that's the first part of the Venn diagram. The second part, which we're still in, is demand. You need to solve problems and know what other people want or companies want so that you can help to solve their problems or achieve their goals. Under demand, we talked about 1, every job, freelance service, or business is based on solving a problem. 2, you want to make that transition from task-based to problem-solving so you can transition from being a minimum wage or getting a minimum wage opportunity to getting more VP or six-figure opportunities. 3, you want to use the CAR formula, and we talked about those 3 key questions. And then number four, which we're on now for demand, is I want you to use the language of the client. So you want to use the language of the person that you are helping or the language of the job description if you're doing a resume. Imagine you went into a doctor's office and you weren't feeling well. The doctor says you have a tussist with an inflamed pharynx and you need to take this long name medication every 300 minutes. Would you understand what the doctor was talking about? Or would you walk out there grumbling, I wish my doctor could speak in plain English, right? If you didn't understand any of that, that means the doctor wasn't really helping you because they were using a bunch of jargon and they weren't talking in your own words. If you're going out there and you're marketing yourself and you're not speaking the language of your client or you're not speaking the language of your employer, it's like you're speaking a foreign language. When you're writing your car stories or talking through your car stories, you want to ask yourself, what are the keywords from the job description? Go through the job description, highlight the skills, qualifications, and experience that the company is looking for, and use that language when you're talking about yourself and when you're marketing yourself. That will be game-changing because you'd rather that doctor say you have a cough and a sore throat, take this medication every 5 to 6 hours and written you a prescription. It's so much simpler when somebody speaks in your language. So are you using a generic resume? Are you using a generic cover letter? Are you using a generic pitch when you're selling to a client? Or are you asking questions and looking and listening to what they're really saying their problem is and then trying to solve that problem? So the next thing that I want you to do is switch from using passive language to using active language. So a lot of people, when they're writing the resume or their cover letter and they're talking about themselves to a client, they'll pitch themselves by saying, I worked at this company, which enabled me to, or I was responsible for, or this allowed me to. And that's very passive language. You want to get rid of those words and focus on active language. So I designed, I developed, I led. You want to use language like that, those verbs, those active verbs. You want to Google active versus passive language and incorporate more active language. When you're using active language, what you're doing is you're talking about the problems that you've actually solved. You're talking about the actions that you actually took instead of just saying responsible for. Because you could be responsible for something, but never actually get it done. It's like running on a treadmill versus running a marathon. When you're running on a treadmill, you're following the steps, but you're not actually physically moving anywhere faster, even though you've done the work over and over again. When you run on the ground, you actually cover that mile and you achieve something as far as like you physically move distances. So when you are talking about your experiences, are you using passive language that seems like you're just doing tasks and people don't know what sort of results you've achieved? Or are you using active language that shows that you actually moved your physical body that mile and created that benefit to the company or to your client? So here's a trick, and we're still under the language piece. So we talked about using the language of the client, so a tussist versus a cough, active versus passive language. And then now we're going to talk about pitching to a dream job. So when I was applying for work, and again, I had 90 days. After the first 30 to 60 days, I had just like applied to 100 jobs and I got no responses, like zero. I was devastated. I had no idea because I knew I had skills, but I had no idea when nobody was reaching out to me. When I started to pitch myself and use this car star formula, I really wanted to use it to the best of my ability. So one of the tricks that I used was, let's say I wanted to apply for a marketing assistant job. Instead of looking for marketing assistant roles right off the bat, I looked for VP of marketing jobs. As a recent graduate who was totally unqualified for that VP role, I tried to incorporate that language into my car stories on my resume. And so what that did was it challenged me to really focus on problem solving, because you'll find that assistant job descriptions are much more task-based or action-based. And VP job descriptions are much more problem-solving focused and strategy focused. You're either solving problems or helping organizations achieve goals at that level. You're not really doing all of the nitty-gritty tasks per se. So what you want to think about is, What are some higher level jobs that are 2, 3, or 5 levels above the job that you want to have? Try and pitch yourself as honestly as possible to get that job. And that helps you create your first draft of your car stories. Then you can take that draft and tailor it to use the language of the individual job descriptions. But you've thought about how you've problem solved at a higher level. Does that make sense? Now we're going to move on to what you should evaluate when you're listening to clients, right? So there are 4 things that I want you to look for when you're reviewing a job description. These are 4 things that can help you when you're listening to clients too, or when you're trying to pitch yourself to clients. If every job, freelance service, or business is based on solving a problem, then a job description is an outline of the problem and the skills, qualifications, and experience the company thinks you need to solve that problem. So you want to go through and highlight what you think the problem is based on the job description, what you think the skills that they're looking for are, and you want to focus on higher level skills. Sometimes things will say like oral and written communication skills, but you want to focus on higher level skills like data analysis, or if you're in environmental sciences, ArcGIS, or are they talking about programming languages if you're in computer sciences? If you're in like the health sciences or a nurse, are they talking about specific areas like orthopedics? So you want to think about what are these higher level skills that they're looking for, not the basics. And then what are the qualifications? So qualifications, degrees, certifications, licenses, anything along those lines of educational experience, and then experience. So skills, the problem, number one, the skills, number two, the qualifications, number three, the experiences. So they may say lived experience preferred. If you're applying for something to work in diversity and equity, they may say lived experience in BIPOC or LGBTQ preferences or things like that. Depending on the type of work that you're doing, they may ask for work experience or lived experience, and you want to highlight those things. You're going to incorporate those into your CAR statements. When you highlight those 4 areas, you're going to start to group similar things that they're asking for together. Some job descriptions will actually do this for you, where they'll group things. Like they may say, if let's say you're applying for a social media marketing manager, they may say communications, project management, and social media are 3 top skills. And then they'll list different tasks under that. You want to start to group different skills that they're looking for together. Then you're going to create CAR stories that match those skills. You can include those CAR stories as bullet points in your career highlight section. You can incorporate them into your cover letter. It's a really robust way of selling and marketing yourself. I talked briefly about these career highlight sections that can go at the top of your resume. So a lot of people would call these skills summary or professional summary or profile, things like that. But you want to use that list that you created of the skills, qualifications, and experience that they're looking for and apply that to that summary. If your resume is going through an applicant tracking system, which is an online scanner that looks at your skills to see if you're qualified, you want to make sure that you've incorporated the language of the job description in there so that you'll pass that scanner. So you want your resume to show why you're qualified for the job. Following this structure that I'm telling you is really effective at doing that. The next piece that I want to talk to you about we're moving on to the third piece of the Venn diagram, your skills. That's a piece that people find tricky. So the first tricky piece is people want to know, well, how do you build a career that funds your life goals? We talked about that connection between your desire and market demand and how you need to meet other people's desires so you can fund your own desires. That's the connection between those two. Now we're talking about skills. So this is like the bottom middle circle in the Venn diagram. They call it an interest pros cons list. There are 3 types of skills. Skills you are interested in, but you haven't explored yet. Number 2 is skills you love or like using. And those are things you want to incorporate into your work. The pros from your previous work and volunteer experiences. Number 3 is skills you hate using, like scanning documents would be one of those for me, or you don't like using. The cons. The trick is you can do this list, but now you need to find a way to tie your skills to demand, right? And that is where a lot of people get stuck. Well, oh, I know I have all these skills and I've been doing stuff, or I've been studying, but I don't really know what I want to do now. This is where you go through what I call a job search rabbit hole. So, you know, when you go into YouTube and you start one place and then 3 hours later, you're still there, but you're someplace else. That's what I want you to do. So that's a YouTube rabbit hole. We're doing a job search rabbit hole. So you're going to take the keywords that pop up from your interests and your pros, the skills you like using and the skills you're interested in, and you're going to start to type them into Google and do unique combinations and try synonyms. You may stumble across a field that you have never heard of before that would be super interesting for you. For example, I had a friend, she did her PhD in physics and she was doing a postdoc in biofuels and combustion. She decided she didn't want to do that anymore, which is really common. A lot of PhDs I know will want to pivot careers because they sort of get jaded. PhDs can be very traumatic experiences, especially if you don't have a good supervisor. But anyway, that's a tangent. So she wanted to change paths. I told her she had to go through this rabbit hole. The first time I told her that, she was like, I don't get what you're talking about. This doesn't make any sense. What am I going to find? And what I always say is you don't know what you don't know. So you don't know what options are out there that you haven't explored yet. You don't know what career options are out there. They could be something that combines all of your unique interests. So she made a pros and interest list of the things she liked. And all of the same themes kept coming up. So your skills don't have to just come from your work experience or your school experience. They can come from your like personal things. So for her, she's very interested or she's passionate about climate change. And she's a vegan. She's passionate about environmentalism. And she really likes the outdoors. She wanted something that just wouldn't be so research focused, but she also didn't want to get rid of all of the previous experiences that she had from doing a PhD and working on developing those research skills. But she wanted something that would allow her to talk to people and engage with people. She's passionate about like social justice and equity issues. She wanted something that would combine interacting with people, with science and climate change. And so she kept on typing in these keywords. And in her case, it took 1 or 2 months of probably somewhat inconsistent effort. But if you were really like crammed, you can do it in a quicker time frame. And because I did it for me in probably like 7 days when I did it. She went through the rabbit hole and she landed on this field called energy justice that she had never heard of before. And from there, she started networking with people within the energy justice field and then pitching herself into opportunities. That's a really cool way to build a career. And she's working on doing this work in remote indigenous communities and helping with infrastructure projects and really wants it to be informed by the communities and their needs and creating sustainable energy infrastructures. So it incorporates the outdoors, it incorporates interacting with people, incorporates equity and justice. And it gives her this incredible learning opportunity to learn about indigenous culture. And she also is using her research and her physics and combustion background to look at the energy. So this rabbit hole can totally transform your career. This formula that I'm showing you, this Venn diagram, can be useful for you building out your experience and changing and pivoting your direction at any stage of your career. So these techniques work no matter what level of career you are at. And I want you to think about what happens if you don't tie these things together, because you may be in one of these situations. So let's say you just are tying your skills to market demand. So you're just applying for jobs and you're not thinking about what you want out of life. What that will lead you to is being an unhappy professional because you don't feel satisfied. You feel constricted and trapped by your work. It's not helping you achieve what you want. You feel stuck. You feel like you're pushing paper. You feel like there's not enough room for growth. You don't know what you want to do. And you just feel like even if you're making money, you're still unhappy. So what sense does it make? I don't want you to be in that situation. I want you to tie it to what you want out of life. I want you to go through the rabbit hole so you're tying the skills you enjoy using and you're not just doing work because these skills you have match demand, because you could be tapping into those skills that you don't like using. I also want to keep it realistic. So when you are trying to tie your skills to demand, there's some skills that you don't want to use for work. For example, I love arts. I've done visual arts. I did extra arts courses all through like high school and primary school, and I held art exhibitions and I've sold art in the past, but I would never want to be like a paid full-time artist because I know myself, I would experience creative burnout, especially if I was creating art for somebody else. So I'm not one of those people who could just have that constant creative energy. I love strategizing and problem solving, but I can't be an artist. And although I love incorporating my art into like little doodles that I'll do for my work or like still doing art as a side project, I don't want that to be my business or my career. So maybe there are some things that should still be hobbies, but maybe there are some hobbies that you would love to turn into a career. So what can you do consistently day in, day out? What would you do for free? Think about that. And these are some things that you may want to incorporate into that keyword list that you're using to do that job search rabbit hole. The other piece is think about if you just tied your skills to what you want out of life. That usually leads you down that starving artist path. And that leads a lot of people to the trap of thinking that if I pursue what I want out of life, I will not be able to afford another iPhone. I won't be able to buy my house. I will never be able to like financially support a family. And it makes you think that you'll struggle. But the truth is you don't have to be a starving artist. You don't have to just tie your skills to what you want out of life. You can be somebody that's tying it to actual market demand and connecting with other people and making sure there are people that want to pay for what you do, or at least a portion of what you do, so that you can fund yourself. And it may be that you have something set up where either you're making direct money from whatever you love to do, whatever your hobby or passion is, or you fund yourself in a way where you're still doing work that you like, and that allows you to do the things that you really enjoy in the evenings. But you're getting a good balance because you are achieving what you really want out of life. Okay, and then the third, if you are not an unhappy professional or a starving artist, you may know what you want out of life. If I spoke to you right now, you may be able to tell me that off the top of your head, like, this is exactly what I want. And you know what type of jobs you want. But then you're missing the skills piece. So you don't know what skills you need to get you there. And if you're missing that skills piece, or maybe you haven't developed the skills, maybe you need to acquire a certification or you need to go back to school because it is a profession that requires a degree. A lot of people will go back to school because they're having trouble finding jobs. You shouldn't go back to school because you're having trouble finding a job. That's when you need to learn how to market yourself. You should go back to school if you're trying to learn how to solve problems, or if you're trying to develop your skills in something that you're interested in, like genuinely interested in. And you, while you're in school, you should constantly be looking at the types of problems that you can solve, like real world problems that you could be applying. That is the best way to sort of build out your experience. I just want to like recap and tell you the top three things that I did that made a big shift for me when I had 90 days to find a job. Number one was, instead of applying for hundreds of jobs, I made really tailored resumes and cover letters for like 10 jobs at a time. Number two, I used the CAR formula and I incorporated the language of the job description. So about incorporating the language. So often bullet points in the resume will follow the formula of action result. You don't start off with the challenge. You start off with action, that active verb. Then you talk about the results that you've delivered. The result implies the challenge and it implies the situation and the time frame. But then when you're going into interviews, you would use the full CAR formula and talk about the problem, the action, and then the result. The third thing that I did was I tried to market myself to a job a few levels above mine. So if applying for a marketing assistant, look for like a VP of marketing job. I think that's wrapping it up. I'm going to end this off by letting you listen to some of a live coaching session that I delivered to two people looking for work during COVID. The way I define it, the happy career is a job, freelance service, or business that allows you to expand your income potential. So you have more control over your income and benefits. It aligns with who you are as a person. So you can stop hating Mondays and you can start to love what you do. It gives you more control over your time and flexibility so that you can spend time with loved ones and do things that you enjoy doing with your life. It doesn't stress you out. Ultimately, it's about creating a career that aligns with who you are. Because a lot of us go into the workplace and we feel like our suits are like our body armor. It's almost like we're putting on a mask. We don't bring our whole selves into the workplace and we feel sort of stuck. We start to get tired and lethargic when it's time to wake up for a Monday and we hate hitting the alarm. And yes, now a lot of us, some of us are working from home and we have more flexibility. But that's really giving us a lot of time to question, what are we doing? Why haven't we made a change? But there's also a fear to make change and what change could look like. Things have changed with the pandemic. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of time for self-reflection. And there's a lot of questions. Some people would be coping like with mental health struggles. And it's an odd time. I know that these tools have helped me navigate hard times. You're going to be able to hear from Bridget and Emily about where they are at and how they are navigating it. It's about creating a sense of community so that we know that we're not alone in figuring this all out. When you're branching out to start your own company, to start your own business, what you're doing is going out. When you're an employee at a company, you have one client. One main client, your employer, the person who is paying you to solve everybody's problems. So when you work for a company, you have a higher risk because if you lose that job, you lose all of your income. When you go out and you start your own business, what you are doing is you are going to be going from having one client to many clients. When you start your own business, you're basically, it's a lot of the process for marketing yourself is the same. A lot of the principles are the same when you're marketing yourself for a job or to attract clients for your business. The difference is the tools that you use. If you learn how to tell a story that is convincing, if you learn how to identify the problem that you solve, understand people's struggles and explain to them how you help and how you can make their lives better, this is how you start to make money. And it's true whether you're trying to land one job or one contract with an employer or multiple contracts with multiple clients. As you have more than one client, you need to set up systems so that you can help those clients effectively. And that's when you go from having a job to having a freelance service to having a business. Today, when we're talking with Emily and Bridget, we're having this live coaching session. I really want you to think about how this can affect you. So where are you right now? Do you have one contract in a job and you want to pivot or increase the number of contracts that you're serving and implement systems that you can help more than one person? Do you know the types of problems that you solve? Do you have a business idea? Do you have a clear career direction? And if you don't, there are going to be things I'm going to be talking about today.
Just to be clear, are you two looking more for a job or entrepreneurship, or you're considering both? Okay.
Bridget.
I personally do believe in my heart that I'm like also a born entrepreneur, but I have so many ideas that I find it hard to focus. I don't know if you guys have ever taken the Enneagram test or personality tests. There's a lot of them. Yeah. I love taking all of them, but they've taught me a lot about myself. And I struggle with following through on an idea because I have so many ideas. So that's where my struggle, I think, has come. Whereas I've stayed in these roles because I've done account management. I'm a people person. I really can connect with all different types of clients and I love that. But I also am like, I don't know if I want to do this the rest of my life. It's just like mind numbing sometimes. So I'm looking into both. Obviously, like I'm at a point where I'm sure everyone is. They need stability. They need income. They need, you know, those things. But I'm like, what could I feel like I have something to offer and I just need to narrow in on it. And what you just said is very, it just helps my mind already. To like start writing those things and like clear out the clutter. Cause I love to brainstorm. I love to think of ideas, but I really want to try and use this time to focus in and narrow in. Cause I definitely think of myself as a mixed bag and I love that I have a lot of different skills, but it's making me pop around a lot, and I really want to feel confident in what I can offer to someone. So I guess you can tell I talk a lot. I have a lot going on in my head. Okay. I always like talking and go on a rampage, but yeah, I'm looking for both.
Okay. And Emily?
I would say also I'm looking for both, because in the past I'm more entrepreneurial because I'm an independent contractor for teaching. And that's just, I still want to do that, but that might be something more on the side that I just do on weekends or every once in a while. But I would still like to focus more like at one company, you know, helping solve their problems. So more working for a company with entrepreneurship on the side.
Okay. So I find a lot of people do that until they feel more comfortable. So they want to start with a company, which is totally fine. Like, you need money coming in every month. And then you start your entrepreneurial journey, which does take a while to grow. It's not like an overnight thing. Like, you, for some people, it can happen quickly if you're able to really target down your idea and find that audience and sell to them. But for most people, it takes a while to really narrow down what you offer and where that target market is, so that you can sell to them and feel comfortable and confident selling to them. Cause that's another hurdle that a lot of people have. Like, how do I market myself? How do I talk about what I do? And for most people, what I say is, or what I would recommend is, what you'll get to a point where once you realize that you're taking people from that point of, I have a problem, so my life is better, that you're actually doing them a favor, and people will come to you with gratitude for paying you. So I've had people who have paid me, and like, they've paid a fairly high fee, and then they've come back and given me like a tip. And I'm like, I'm not really in a tipping profession, but sure. So it's more like, what is the value that you're adding to this person's life? And once you become solid on that, it's sort of like, if you have a favorite restaurant, how frustrated would you be if that restaurant like closed its doors and you could just see the food from the outside? How frustrated would you be if you like just were not allowed to go into that restaurant? That restaurant never marketed. They never told you when they were open. So every time you went there like and tried to get food, the doors were closed. You'd be really frustrated. And that's what it's like, yeah, if you have a way to help people and you're not sharing it. That's the way people will start to feel. They'll start to get really frustrated with you because you have this way that you can make their lives better, but you're not sharing it with them or making it easy for them to access. And that's ideally the point where I want you to get to. And part of that is, you can start by just doing a basic mind map and going like taking some sticky notes to like a blank table and just saying, okay, these are some problems that I faced in my life. These are some things that I'm passionate about. These are some fears that I have, for yourself. And then do that for somebody else. Do that for the people in your life. What are some problems that the people in your life are facing? What are some passions that they have? What are some fears that they have? And you may either through taking people on the journey that you've been through yourself, or helping other people on a journey. So for example, for me, the struggle to learn how to market myself was a very short one, but it's a skill that I then took for granted. But then when I realized, when I was sharing it to people, they found it very useful. So that's a problem that they were facing that I had already been through, and I just sort of took for granted that I knew. For you, Emily, that sounds like it could be like golfing, right? Like, it's really probably something that's easy for you. You share it with people. You know the techniques. It's not a lot of work. But it's probably not your only skill that you can share. It could be one of many.
Right.
And so you don't want to just limit yourself, because you do have more that you can share. And sometimes it can be daunting because you think, like, maybe after you do this process and you mind map out and you're trying to figure out which idea to choose, you think, okay, well, I don't know if I have enough skills to go and pursue an idea. Let's say you want to be like a digital marketing agency or something, start that up. And one of the things that you can do is, you can be a leading learner. So even though you don't know everything, you can be a few steps ahead of the people that you're teaching. So if you go and buy a few books, you watch a few YouTube videos, you're already a few steps ahead. And if you just start posting about that, the benefit is, when you start sharing your knowledge, you're sharing the knowledge at the level of somebody that's just like a few steps behind you. So you'll start to be that sort of information resource, because the people, like, when I talk about career stuff, Like when I'm working with my editor, sometimes I'll explain something in two sentences and she's, whoa, you need to slow down and break that down. And by the time I'm done, it's four paragraphs. Because I just needed to break the concept down so that I can articulate it better. And the advantage of being like a leading learner is you're not going to do that. You're not going to explain something in two sentences. You're not going to like skip over steps to improve your golf swing. You're going to say, okay, like I just figured out this really basic thing and all the experts were just kind of doing it. And they weren't explaining to us that you just need to make this little tweak and everything just becomes a little easier. So when you're evaluating your different ideas, don't feel like you have to know everything to go and take that next step. And yes, you do want to set it up. Like you can learn how to create a resume and market yourself in that sense. But know that once you learn those principles, a lot of them can transfer over to marketing yourself in like for entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So one of the basic principles that's commonly taught to write a successful resume is like CAR statements. Have you guys heard of them? You have, Emily?
I've heard of STAR, yeah.
Okay. And Bridget, have you heard of?
I have not.
Okay. So I'll break it down and I'm going to try to be not to be too repetitive for you, Emily, because I am going to build on the concept. The CAR statement. So CAR stands for challenge, action, result. And it can the challenge can be broken down into situation and time frame. And this is a format for writing a bullet point for a resume. It's a format for answering an interview question because it goes back to that basic principle that I said, where every job, career, business is based on taking people from the point of I have a problem to the point of that problem is solved. So with a company, what they really want to see is that you have a track record. Like your resume is a history of meeting people's needs. So it's not a history of all of the work that you've done. It's a history of delivering results to people and companies who have similar problems to the problem that you're applying to solve. And so you want to use as many transferable skills as possible. And when I use that example of the lyrics, one of the things that you want to do is you want to use the language of your customer. So the language of the job description, the language of your client. And so what are the words they're using? And a common example of this is if you went into the doctor, it's also a very relevant example. If you went into the doctor and you said, hey, I have a cough, I had a fever, I have a runny nose. And the doctor said, you have a tussis with an inflamed pharynx. And they just start using all this medical terminology. You'd be like, okay. And the doctor says, okay, take this long named medication every 140 minutes or something like that, right? Like you would just be like, what are you trying to tell me to do right now? You want the person to speak to you.
I don't understand.
What does this mean?
Yeah, your eyes are just sort of gloss over. So you want to speak in the language of your target audience. So what's the language that your client is using? So what's the language in that job description? What sort of skills are they saying that you're looking for? And you just want to transfer that into a challenge, action, result statement. So this is the before situation that a prior client has experienced. So if you are looking at marketing, so they were struggling with sales. My action was I would draw some skills that they were referencing in the job description. So let's say the job description was saying Facebook ad strategy. So I designed a Facebook ad strategy using pixels and tracking conversions to achieve a result of a marketing campaign with a 200% return on investment. So that's the challenge, the action, and then the result. And you can provide a time frame. So, and I did this within 6 weeks. So now you're painting a picture. So an effective resume or marketing campaign in general maximizes value. So you show how you help and how you improve the life of the person. It tells a story. So it's not just the doctor talking about the pharynx and the tussis, which is another word for cough. It's about you painting a picture that your target audience can understand, that paints a journey of how their life can improve by working with you and the skills that you bring to the table. So there's three components that you need to know. Where are they now? Where do they want to go? And then that in between is how you get them there. And that's the products, services, or work, like how you package your offer. And if you want to make more money, what you do is you can either serve more people, you can increase the value of the problem that you solve. So if something only gives you like a small transformation in your life, or life is only a little bit better, you don't want to pay like $100,000 for it. But if it gives you, if it's life-changing, when people are paying for cancer treatment, those things are life-changing, are willing to invest the money. So how life-changing is your transformation? How much are you helping people? And then another component to look at is how much disposable income does your audience have? Because if you're working with the Kardashians, it's going to be different from the person that was just laid off from COVID, right? Like you're going to charge them different prices. So how much money do they have and what is their concept of money? And that can help you decide how much you charge. Like it's the same thing working for Google versus a new startup. One company has more money to spend and can invest more. And the other company, they're holding on to their dollars because they're trying to grow. So where is that person at? And even for the person that is trying to grow, they can still spare money if you show them the transformation that you're delivering is a higher value. Does that make sense? I just want to check in, make sure I'm not like losing you both.
100%.
Yeah. That absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. It's really like laying out a clear picture for me, which is super helpful. It's just the way you're describing it and the way you're throwing in these analogies to help us understand it. It's just, you're a very good teacher.
Oh, thank you.
It's not an easy thing to do. It's not. So.
Yeah.
And Jet, thank you for giving all of this advice. Like it's amazing. And I just feel like regenerated, even though it's been crazy. I'm just like, oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Jet, what I was going to say, what you're explaining is to, so as a golf instructor, I have many different types of clients. So I'll have clients, you know, at high-end country clubs, and they're willing to pay this amount per hour. And then I'll have clients at a public facility that can only afford this amount per hour. So it's not necessarily that I'm like definitely changing the experience for them, depending on their price point. It's just some people, you know, have that extra money to spend more than others do.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And for the people that have less money, they probably can afford to pay, or they can set aside the money to pay for something that is really valuable, but they may not prioritize golfing as that unless they want to be the next Tiger Woods, right? It's not going to transform their life in that way. So whereas if you enjoy it and you have the disposable income and $200 an hour is nothing for you, then you're going to put that money there and be like, yeah, I'm happy. I really enjoyed it. I had a good time. But it's because that $200 an hour could be like $20 for somebody that's really struggling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's all that into context. So when you are marketing your product, you can apply these services. I mean, these principles as well. What are, I love the example that you gave, Emily, of your different clients, because that also goes to segmenting your market. So what are the different problems that people are facing? And one thing that you can do once you start to sort of hone in on your idea is once you find those FOQs, you start to group them. You'll start to list them out and you'll find that you can group them into different topics. And the people, like when you're thinking about your career, the first question that you probably have is like, what sort of career generally should you follow? How do you build a career that supports a life that you love? Before you get into the nitty gritty of how do I market myself? How do I find somebody to speak to? Because you don't even know what you want to do first. So answer the questions that people have first. And that's what you do in like a golf lesson. You teach the basics before you go up to the higher level concepts. And so what you want to do is first figure out what those different market segments are. And then what questions do they have first? And that's when you start to get on your like buyer journey, which you hear people talking about so often. And what I say is when you're thinking about like the concept of a client avatar that you'll often hear people talk about when they talk about marketing concepts and principles, you don't want to think about things like demographics or like race, religion, because those aren't the things that really segment people. It's their fears, obstacles, and questions. So shared fears, obstacles, and questions, and the order that they come in, that will be the best thing for you to use to prioritize people. Okay, and then the way you translate that into the challenge, action, result framework is the challenge, which remember can be broken into situation and time frame, is really addressing their why. So that's when you're addressing those fears, obstacles, questions. And for me, when I'm marketing, I literally just list them. I list them verbatim in the words that my audience says. So I don't know how to find my next step. I don't know how to market myself. I'm afraid of talking about myself. Those are the common things that I've heard in those exact words over and over again. And then I say, okay, well, this is the action that I will take. I will show you a 5-step formula for marketing yourself. And then the result is you will feel confident explaining what you do in one sentence at your next marketing or networking event, right? So you're painting a picture that starts off with there's fears, obstacles, and questions. It goes into the action, how you will start to do what you do, and then the result. And for a job, those actions are the skills that are listed in that job description. For a company, those actions are your product, service, package, methodologies. So every career, job, or business is based on taking a person or client from point A, if I have a problem, to point B, that problem is solved. Your job, product, or service is then you packaging that, like gift wrapping that, into a full transformation. So you're saying these are the different steps. This is my little gift to you to get you to step one. This is my next gift to you to get you to step two. And that is how you will, that's how you start to design different tiers of a product or an offering. It's also how you start to make it less intimidating for yourself. So instead of trying to say you're trying to solve the whole world or whole market's problems at once, you're saying, okay, this is the ideal person that I want to work with. This is how I can help them. And then this is how they can get to step one. And this is what I'll be offering. Is that making sense? Just another check-in.
A light bulb just went off in my head. I'm just like, okay. Like through all the clutter. I didn't know this, but when I joined my last team, I had never worked fully remote and it was all virtual, right? Video chat before, when I used to do video chats with companies, like nobody would show their face. It was just like a brand new world. And when I got let go, I got some pretty good letters of recommendation from my boss and VP, and I've always wanted to create change in company culture and help people build their teams and feel comfortable and show their true selves, because a lot of people put on, you know, the work face, they go into work, whatever. So now that this world is shifting to kind of like, at least for now, this virtual workforce, which I think will keep continuing even after we get through this, I just thought of like, how can I help companies create that virtual culture where everyone feels comfortable and at ease? Because it's hard to do that when you're not in person. It's easier to do when you're in person. It's harder to do when you're not in person. And I love doing that. So you're just helping me like narrow in on some ideas in my head.
That's a great idea. That's because a lot of companies are switching to being more virtual. And how do they make their teams feel supported? Right. One role that I saw come up a couple of years ago was they had like a coach, I can't remember the name of the company, but they were hiring a coach for their virtual employees to offer professional development. Yeah. Because if you're doing professional development and it's just like an online course and you're already working remotely, it doesn't really give you a sense of community.
No.
And yeah, you could go to a pottery class or something, but you really want something where you're checking in with people to make sure that they're okay. And so this company, the CEO was hiring somebody to support them in doing that, just making sure that their team was feeling supported and feeling motivated, and just the retention that can occur from that, and like the ability to address problems early on. And so these are the things that you can market as the benefits of this kind of service, right? So you're checking in with people, you're giving them sort of an anonymous outlet, because people can feel uncomfortable talking directly to their CEO and telling them what's
right. Happening.
Versus if you're doing it if you're the intermediary that they just pay on retainer, you can offer this service where they can stay connected to their teams and they can you can give them advice and support on what are the current industry trends on having the best like team and what are the best tools to use. And these are the sorts of benefits that you can offer. And there are a ton of like coaches, online courses are growing. Like even like I'm in the process of redoing one of my online courses. So yeah, like that's a great thing. That's a great idea.
Yeah. As you were talking, I just was, cause I've thought about this for years, just being in really toxic cultures, even when you're there in person, just simple things that you can do to create, cause it is your team that keeps you going. Like it doesn't, sometimes it's, you're doing the work, right? But it's the people that you're with that make you feel safe and like psychologically safe to be yourself. I think, yeah, I just feel like now I'm really focused on that, which just came from this conversation. And so I know we're at like the hour mark. And Jet, I can't thank you enough for going through all of that. It's stuff like this where I feel so grateful, because I'm down the line, I want to hire you as my in. Like, it's stuff like this where it's like, you're going to be so top of mind for that. And I just can't, I know that Emily probably feels the same way. I feel like we both took away so much from this, and
definitely,
I just can't thank you enough.
Yeah, no problem. Like, I'm happy to help.
So this actually turned out perfectly.